It is clear from his own words that Robert Bowers, the man alleged to have opened fire on that Pittsburgh synagogue, was filled with hate. He posted bigoted statements and conspiracies online for months ahead of the shooting. And during the attack itself, according to a federal indictment, Bowers said he wanted to kill Jews. He is charged with 44 counts, including hate crimes for the murder of 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue. NPR's Eric Westervelt looks at what, if anything, can get violent far-right extremists in America to change.
Tony McAleer knows something about the mindset of the suspected synagogue gunman, and he knows how savvy racist recruiters can be. He was one of them. McAleer was steeped in the racist invective Robert Bowers spewed online, one that sees a cabal of malevolent Jews running the world by proxy through banks, corporations, Hollywood, and the media. As a member of the White Aryan Resistance or War, McAleer peddled that conspiracy to attract new members.
I was a Holocaust denier. I ran a computer-operated voicemail system that was primarily anti-Semitic.
He eventually renounced his bigotry and helped create the nonprofit Life After Hate, one of the few groups working to help right-wing extremists find an off-ramp. The good news, there are some programs like his that seem to be effective in de-radicalizing homegrown extremists. The bad news, they're small, hard to scale, and there's no consensus on what really works. Overall, it's an understudied, underfunded, and neglected area.
We haven't wanted to acknowledge that we have a problem with violent right-wing extremism and this kind of domestic terrorism.
Sociologist Pete Seamy at Chapman University has researched violent white nationalists and other hate groups for over two decades. We know more, Seamy says, about what works to best intervene with American gang members or jihadists than how to combat far-right hate. That willful denial, he says, means many nonprofits, social workers, and police today are largely flying blind.
There really haven't been much resources, attention, time, energy devoted to developing efforts to counter that form of violent extremism.
In fact, the Trump administration in 2017 rescinded funding that targeted domestic extremism, including a $400,000 Obama-era federal grant to Life After Hate. The administration instead has focused almost exclusively on threats from Islamist extremists and what it sees as the security and social menace of undocumented immigrants. The programs that best help people leave hate behind, Seamy says, are those that address the full range of issues someone swept into a far-right extremist world might face.
Some additional schooling or employment trainings. Maybe they have some housing needs. Maybe they have some unmet mental health needs. I mean, if substance use problems, what's called wraparound service approach.
But that more holistic model is labor-intensive, costly, and thwarted, Seamy says, by America's woefully inadequate drug treatment and mental health care systems. McAleer, the former White Aryan Resistance recruiter, says adherence to racist beliefs, whether as part of a group or as a lone wolf like the suspected synagogue gunman, is more often sparked by a flawed search for identity and purpose than a deeply held belief. From his experience, the best approach is simply listening and connecting to a person's buried humanity. You condemn the ideology and the actions, he says, but not the human being.
You know, think of them as lost. Somewhere along the line, they find themselves in this place. And I can tell you, being in that place is not a fun place to be. When you surround yourself with angry and negative people, I guarantee you, your life is not firing in all cylinders.
But he concedes that inspiring compassion is a challenging one-on-one approach and one that's hard to scale. Eric Westervelt, NPR News.